Chapter 15. 1. Fleeting impressions half seen through a wall composed of darkness and pain. Dim consciousness of being in a ship and landing. Of someone spooning broth at him. Of being carried in a stretcher with rain on the blankets. Of a stone-walled room, of different faces, of whispered conversations, of another stretcher, of another plane, and a pain in his arm. He sank back into darkness. He thought he was in the drone again. He opened his eyes. He saw Donald Dean's face. He must still be in the sea. But no, he was not cold, he was warm.
"He's coming around," said someone softly. "We'll be able to operate soon."
He opened his eyes and saw boots and kilts, a lot of boots and kilts, standing beside what he was lying on. Plane's motors? He was in a plane. He turned his head a little and it hurt, but there was Donald Dean's face. Johnny saw that he was on a sort of table. He was in a plane, a passenger plane. There was a tall gray man in a white coat on his left side. There were a lot of older Scots on his right side. Four young Scots were sitting on a bench. There was another table with some shiny things on it beyond the doctor. Donald Dean was sitting beside him, and there was a tube and a sort of pump connecting Donald Dean's arm with his own.
"What's this?" whispered Johnny,
indicating the tube, or trying to.
"Blood transfusion,"
said Donald Dean. He felt he should be very careful about what he said. He was smiling, but he was worried and felt very bad. Keep a bright face on it.
"Buddy, you are singularly fortunate. You are getting the royal blood of the Stuarts, no less, which puts you in direct line, after me, of course, to the throne of Scotland."
The doctor was signaling Donald Dean to take it easy. They all knew that Johnny might die, that there wasn't a 30% chance of his recovery, not with those two severe skull fractures and other injuries, as well as shock. His respiration was too shallow. In the underground hospital where they had operated for centuries, in a land where skull injuries were common, the doctor had seen too many die in less injured condition than this one. He was looking down at the big, handsome lad with something like pity.
"This is Dr. McKendrick," said Donald Dean to Johnny. "He'll handle you all right. You always overdo things, Johnny. Most would be content with one skull fracture, but not you, laddie. You've got two."
Donald Dean smiled.
"You'll be right as rain in no time."
He wished he could believe it. Johnny's face bore the gray of death.
"Maybe I should have waited for you in the drone, if you were so close,"
whispered Johnny. The older Scots let out an incredulous gasp. Chief of Clan Fergus stepped forward.
No, Mac Tyler. The foul thing crashed just a mile north of Cape Wrath. 'Twas almost upon us."
"How did you find me?"
whispered Johnny.
"Laddie," said Donald Dean, "when you light a beacon fire to gather the clans, you don't do it halfway. The drone went up to 10,000 feet like a flaming rocket, and like to have lit the whole of Scotland. That's how we spotted you."
The chief of the Argyles grumbled,
"That wasn't what your companion told us, Donald Dean. They said your what-you-call-it detected a small object in the water, and then got a look on a plane, and then saw the fire."
Donald Dean was very composed.
"It makes a better story that way, and that's the way the historian will write it. He lit a beacon fire in the sky."
The other chiefs nodded firmly. That was the way it should be.
"What day is this?"
whispered Johnny.
D-95.
Johnny felt a bit confused. He had lost a day. 2 days? Where had he been? Where was he? Why? The doctor saw puzzlement. He had seen it before in head injuries. This young man had lost track of time.
"They had to wait for me," he said. "I was not in Aberdeen at the moment. And then we had to type your blood and find someone with the same type. I'm sorry it took so long. But we also had to bring you out of shock, get you warm."
He shook his head sadly.
"I should have gone with you all along.
I'll help the others when we get there.
This upset Johnny a little bit.
Were there a lot of Scots hurt? You shouldn't have delayed for me if you had a doctor.
No, no, said the chief of the Camerons. Dr. Allen, who's so expert with burns, was sent 2 days gone.
21 hurt, said Donaldine. The one being you. Only 2 died, very light casualties. The others will all recover.
Who are they?
Whispered Johnny, making a slight motion with his hand to the 4 young men on the bench.
Why, those, said Donaldine, are 4 members of the World Federation for the Unification of the Human Race. The first one is a MacDonald, and he speaks Russian now. The second is an Argyle, and he speaks German.
That wasn't why they were there at all. They were the others they'd found of Johnny's blood type, waiting in case more transfusions were needed.
And why am I in a plane?
Whispered Johnny. That was the question they didn't want to answer. The doctor had told them not to worry this young man. They had him in a plane and were rushing him to the huge underground defense base in the mountains. There was some chance of a Cyclo counterattack. They had no idea at all whether the bombs sent to Cyclo had succeeded or failed. The Chamko brothers had told them about the force screen on Cyclo's transshipment area, and that the early recoil had shown evidence of the screen's closing. The Chamkos had also told them that common salt neutralized the kill gas completely. Angus had gotten mine ventilation fans into the old base, and they'd found salt for filters of air. A group of excited, imported, awed Russians were at that very moment cleaning up the old base, and the parson was burying the dead there. And they were not about to leave Johnny McTyler anywhere but safe in that base. Donald Dean answered,
What? Why not in the plane? You want to miss the victory celebration, but can't have that.
A Scot helping Dwight up in the cockpit area came back and whispered in Donald Dean's ear. He was dragging a mic on a long cord. They had it on the planetary band. Donald Dean turned to Johnny.
They want to hear your voice so they can believe you're alive?
Who? Said Johnny.
The compound, the people. Just say something about who you are.
Donald Dean put the mic very close to Johnny's mouth.
I'm fine,
Johnny whispered. Then something told him he should try harder. He tried to speak louder.
I'm just fine.
Donald Dean gave the mic back to the Scot, who hesitated, not sure the message had gone out. Donald Dean waved him away.
I hear other planes,
whispered Johnny. With a glance at the doctor for permission, Donald Dean helped him turn his head. Johnny looked through the plane ports. There were 5 planes out there, stacked in a long echelon. He turned his eyes and looked out the other port. There were 5 planes out there in another echelon.
It's your escort,
said Donald Dean.
My escort? Whispered Johnny. But why? Everybody helped.
Aye, laddie, said the chief of Clan Fergus. But you were the one. You were the bonny one.
The doctor disconnected the tube. He felt Johnny's pulse. He nodded and motioned the others to silence. He had let this go on too long. The plane was not vibrating. The flight was very smooth. He had his patient out of shock. He wished he were in his own operating cave, but the others would not leave this young man there. And he himself, having heard but a small part of it, could share their awe and respect for what he had done.
If you'll just drink this, said the doctor, that will make things easier.
They held the cup to Johnny's mouth. It was whiskey and it had heavy herbs in it. He managed to drink it. Shortly the pain grew less and he seemed to be floating. The doctor signaled them all to be quiet. He had a trephine in his hand. The brain was being pressed upon in 3 places, not 2, and the pressure must be relieved. Donald Dean went up to the cockpit to help Dwight. He glanced at their escort. Most of them were flying with 1 pilot. They had each smashed their mine sites and come hammering back here when he put out the call for a massive patrol to the north of Scotland. They all should have gone home, but they wouldn't hear of it when they knew about Johnny. They'd gone down with the Scott War Party and gotten more planes from the Cornwall mine site after shooting the few cyclos staggering around, and those not ordered back for urgent duty had been sitting, waiting for news about Johnny. Now they were escorting him home.
"You'd better tell them he's all right," said Dwight. "They keep calling in every 2 or 3 minutes for news, and so does Robert the Fox. Takes one man just to handle the radio."
"He's not all right," said Donald Dean,
and he looked down the long corridor to where the doctor had begun the operation. Dwight glanced at Donald Dean. Was the young prince crying? He felt like it himself. 2. Johnny had been in a coma for 3 days. They had brought him to the ancient underground military base in the Rocky Mountains, where salt filters could be dropped into place at once if a counterattack materialized from the planet Cyclo. The hospital complex was very extensive. It was all white tile, hardly any of it cracked. The Russians had cleaned it all up, and the parson had buried the crumbling dead. 15 of the wounded Scots were there, including Thor and Glen Cannon. They were in a separate series of rooms from Johnny's, but one could hear them now and then, especially when the pipe major gave them an afternoon concert. Dr. Allen and Dr. McKendrick had already discharged 5 of them as reasonably well, and certainly too restless and impatient to keep idle when so many things were going on elsewhere. Chrissy had been in constant attendance at Johnny's bedside, and she rose when Dr. McKendrick and Angus McTavish came in. They seemed angry with one another, and Chrissy hoped they would go soon. McKendrick put a hand on Johnny's forehead and stood there for a moment, looking at the ashen pallor. Then he turned to Angus with an expressive hand that seemed to say, "See?" Johnny's breathing was shallow. 3 days before, Johnny had awakened and whispered to her to send for somebody. There was always a Scot guard at the door, his assault rifle blocking out would-be visitors, of which there were too many. Chrissy had brought him in and watched worriedly, while Johnny whispered a long message to Robert the Fox, and the guard got it on a picto-recorder mic held close to Johnny's lips. The message had been to the effect that if another gas drone appeared in the sky, they could probably stop it by landing 30 recon drones on it with magnetic skids and racing their engines on reverse coordinates so the gas drone's motors would burn out. Chrissy didn't understand the message, but she did understand that it was too tiring to Johnny. He had relapsed back into a coma, and when the guard came back to say Sir Robert sent his thanks and would do that, Chrissy was quite cross with him. The same guard was on again when Dr. McKendrick and Angus were let in, and Chrissy vowed she would reason with him. McKendrick, yes. Angus, definitely no.